This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, October 9th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock sits down with Jim Guy Tucker and Ed Bethune. The two former congressmen offer their thoughts on the partial federal government shutdown. And we learn more about Holiday Island's centralized water and sewer system.
Plus, plans to develop a Northwest Arkansas Regional Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan are beginning to take shape. Also, the musical duo Brickfields, who just won the Ozark Blues Society's Blues Challenge, stops by the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
But first, the Arkansas Department of Health, the Arkansas Department of Education, and local school districts across the state are offering flu vaccines to children in grades kindergarten through 12th. The vaccines will be offered beginning this week and will continue for the next several months. State epidemiologist Dirk Haslow with the Health Department says the vaccine is not required but highly recommended because the flu has such negative impacts.
It infects, sickens, and kills more people than all other vaccine preventable diseases combined. The number of deaths varies widely every year from the flu. On an average year, it's about 25,000 people a year across the United States die from the flu.
The vaccine is free of charge, but each child is required to have a signed consent form from the Arkansas Department of Health and the school district before they can be vaccinated.
The partial shutdown of the federal government continues into its second week, and the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality is being affected by that shutdown. Teresa Marks is the head of the department, which has 379 employees. Of those, Marks says 92 were furloughed when the shutdown began more than a week ago.
We were able to actually draw down some money that we weren't sure we were going to be able to get from the federal level, which allowed us to bring back some of those. So now we're at 58 furloughed employees, which is still a very grave concern to us because certainly it's a very serious matter for those folks who are on leave without pay.
Mark says many engineers and workers in the legal division are among those that are still furloughed.
It's certainly affecting the day-to-day activities. There are certain things that are just going on hold that we are simply not able to get to.
The ADEQ isn't the only environmental agency being affected by the shutdown. The Environmental Protection Agency is also severely hampered by the partial federal shutdown. Yesterday, Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel submitted a letter to U.S. Representative Tim Griffin imploring the congressman to speak with the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, and congressional leadership to reopen the government. In the letter, the Attorney General stated the shutdown of the EPA, other federal agencies, and the ADEQ are negatively impacting a pending lawsuit against the Exxon Mobil Corporation for its role in the Mayflower oil spill earlier this year.
Fayetteville aldermen next week will consider creating an energy improvement district in the city. Peter Nierengarten, the city's director of sustainability and strategic planning, told aldermen yesterday the District of Columbia and 31 states have enacted legislation allowing property-assessed clean energy, or PACE, financing programs for property owners.
Earlier in 2013, the Arkansas legislature passed PACE enabling legislation. The governor signed it into effect. That legislation essentially allows municipalities or groups of municipalities or even the state as a whole to create energy improvement districts that would allow for energy financing of renewable energy, energy efficiency, and water conservation projects. The beauty of PACE is that it allows a real property owner to borrow money to do an energy improvement on their property and then repay that improvement as part of an assessment on their property taxes.
Nierengarten says because property taxes are paid annually, it is considered a secure way to finance a loan, allowing property owners to get a lower interest rate and to draw out of the period of the loan. The ordinance that will be considered next week will establish the Energy Improvement District in Fayetteville and a host of other things.
And that would be the first in the state of Arkansas under that enabling legislation that our legislature passed. It would allow that Energy Improvement District to manage PACE, Property Assessed Clean Energy, or other energy financing programs. It would establish a board of directors, a 7-person board of directors, which is the requirement under that state enabling legislation. And it lays out the terms for other cities to join our district if they so chose down the road.
Nierengarten says the Energy Improvement District would be legally and financially independent from the city, as cities are prohibited by the state constitution from issuing bonds for the benefit of any corporation or private individual.
Also in Fayetteville, road work today is resulting in a few closed streets. City crews are replacing a stone culvert on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard between Block and South College Avenues. Crews will also replace sections of street, sidewalk, and curbing as part of the project. The section of the street will be closed through October 18th. Drivers are asked to use South School Avenue, 15th Street, and East Huntsville Road as a detour of the area. City street crews have also begun an overlay project on Gregg Avenue between Prospect and North Streets. Parts of Gregg Avenue will be closed during the project. Detours are in place, though drivers will still be able to access their driveways. The overlay project expected to be complete by October 18th.
Arkansas home sales rose during the first 8 months of the year compared to the same period in 2012. According to the CityWire, home sales through August totaled 13,916 in the state's four largest metro areas. That increase of more than 12% was pushed higher by a more than 21% gain in August home sales. In the Northwest Arkansas, Fort Smith, Jonesboro, and Central Arkansas markets, total sales were worth $2.35 billion. An increase of nearly 17% from the same period in 2012.
Clear tonight. Lows from the mid-40s in northwest Arkansas to lower 50s for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow. Highs from 77 to 82. Mostly clear tomorrow night. A little bit warmer. Lows from 52 to 56.
Many elected officials continue to clash over the causes of the federal government's partial shutdown and the blame for the stalemate as well. This week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sought the opinions of two Arkansans who have served in the U.S. House of Representatives, Jim Guy Tucker and Ed Bethune. Tucker, a Democrat, served one term in the House from the state's 2nd District before leaving for an unsuccessful bid for the U.S. Senate. Bethune, a Republican, followed Jim Guy Tucker into the 2nd District seat and served for 6 years. Tucker later became governor but resigned the office in 1996. It should be noted that Roby Brock has a connection to both of his guests. He worked for Jim Guy Tucker when he was governor, and Ed Bethune is a close friend of Roby's family. Finally, the two men have a connection beyond their shared congressional history. They faced each other in a race for attorney general in November 1972.
Jim Guy won. He carried 72 of the 75 counties, but my distinction in that race was I carried my home county and his home county where they knew us best.
All right. Well, I would like for our viewers to also realize that because you guys have had some distinguished political careers, there is life after politics. So catch us up on what you guys have been doing. Ed, you go first. Tell me what you've been up to.
Well, I stay pretty busy. My latest adventure is to help the Ozark Society. We're trying to stop that hog farm that the state has permitted up in Mount Judea. We can't let hog doings get into the buffalo. It'll absolutely kill the tourism business in Arkansas. So I've been working on that. Anything that relates to the wilderness, I've been involved in because I wrote the Wilderness Act for Arkansas. Dale passed it in the Senate. I passed it in the House. We got President Reagan to sign it. So I'm very committed to that. It takes a lot of time.
And you've been writing a novel, too.
I have. I just finished a novel, which I hope will do well. I think it will. People seem to like it, the readers so far. Did a memoir a couple of years ago, which Jim Guy is in there. So that was a fun exercise. And then, of course, I've been involved almost 50 years now with this effort of trying to build a two-party system in Arkansas. And by the way, we're doing pretty well.
There you go. There you go. Jim Guy, how about you? What have you been up to, life after politics?
Well, somewhat like Ed, I've been involved in a lot of volunteer activities. I'm an elder in my church, big Second Presbyterian Church, and that takes a lot of time. I'm on a governor's commission to provide broadband to all the public mm-hmm. schools in the state, high capacity internet, which we're 50th in the nation on that right mm-hmm. now. Racial discrimination and criminal sentencing commission that's out at UALR mm-hmm. and nanotech out there. Mm-hmm. And then I invested in a vaccine company about 6 or 7 years ago and with a fellow from Forest City, Bill Bridgeforth, who's now over in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And we've created vaccines for E. coli, Salmonella, Campylobacter, and Emeria and licensed them to some large companies for animal use. We kept the human rights, and someday I may get a check from them that I get to use. But it's been a lot of fun to do that.
All right. You're both former members of Congress, so I asked you guys to come in here. I want to talk about what's been going on up in Washington, D.C., with the federal government shutdown, the budget impasse up there. And Jim Gow, I'll come to you first. Tell me, what's your take on what's going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, this is a departure from most of the history of Congress. Generally, with a couple of exceptions, the last one I think was in '96 between then Speaker and Bill Clinton, when we had a government shutdown over the continuing resolution. I don't recall an edge of the cliff decision on the debt limit, and a lot of people think the debt limit has to do with new spending, and it doesn't. It has to do with paying the bills we've already incurred. And so when you start messing with the debt limit, now you're talking about the full faith and credit of the United States not being what it's supposed to be, and violating a constitutional mandate that we pay our bills. Hopefully that won't become an issue this go round, but we're perilously close to it. And that's you know, that's something I think both Republicans and Democrats who are anywhere near the moderate range of the spectrum feel very strongly should not be violated. The continuing resolution is something that's very important, but it's how the government runs. And there are genuine folks who see it under the current circumstances as a necessary bargaining tool for policy goals they want to accomplish. The unfortunate thing, in my viewpoint, is the current controversy technically, and Ed, I know you'll correct me if I'm off on this, but technically it arises from the fact that the Republican caucus in the House operates under a rule where you cannot take a bill to the floor unless a majority of the Republican caucus agrees to it.
A majority of the majority party.
A majority of the majority party. So essentially, 120 approximately Republican votes, about 27% of the Congress, can prevent something going to the floor that has majority support in the Congress and would pass. And that's where we are right now, I think, pretty clearly. A combination of moderate Republican votes and probably unanimous Democratic votes would pass it, but the Speaker cannot bring it out of that caucus yet. I hope he'll be able to soon.
Ed, I'd like to get your take on it. What do you see happening?
Well, I have a little bit different view of it. I don't think that the Speaker is married to the so-called Hastert rule. And in this instance, I do not know, and I'm quite confident that you do not know, nor does Roby, nor anyone else, just how the Republican members would vote if the matter was brought to the floor. We make some of these observations based on media reports, and those are based on something that a congressman may or may not have said firsthand or secondhand. So I don't go there. Look, what I'd rather contribute here, if I may, to this discussion is, rather than to get focused on who's at fault here and where the blame should be fixed, that's not a good way to make policy. A better way to look at this is, what is the policy that the Republicans seem to be searching for? And they're saying they'll fund everything in government, but what they are urging the Democrats to do is join with them to delay the Affordable Care Act for 1 year. That seems to me to be eminently reasonable, in as much as it doesn't seem to be working. There are a lot of bugs in it. And the president has already said to businesses that they can be exempt from coverage. But why not individuals? Why not delay this a year for the individuals as well as for the businesses? And then the other piece of it that they're asking for is for members of Congress, senators and congressmen, to live under the same law that the poor young fellow who's 27 with a family of four is going to have to pay for his insurance. They're going to get a subsidy to help them with theirs. They should have to face the same music that the young family does. And so that's what they're asking for. It seems to me that would be, that's a good policy ask.
Let me pitch another question to you guys, maybe harken back to your time in Congress. We see such a divided government right now and such a rancor up there in Washington, D.C. It doesn't seem to me, and maybe I'm just remembering the good old days, that it wasn't that partisan. Why do you think things have gotten as partisan as they've gotten? Jim Guy?
Well, the occasional fits of dramatic partisanship are not unusual in the history of the United States Congress, sometimes when only two parties were there and sometimes more parties. But in recent years, in part due to redistricting that has focused very heavily on making certain districts absolutely fixed and very hard to defeat an incumbent, you've gotten radical members elected just to the right, and there have been times and still today where some to the left are elected, but there's enough far-right members, Tea Party and related members of the Republican Party today that are a departure, in my view, from the, what I consider a generally moderate history of the Republican Party, of starting back with Eisenhower, at least, that makes it very difficult for the moderates to have the voice they should. For example, I think the easy answer to your question, Ed, on whether in fact the bill would pass, the continuing resolution would pass, is let it out of the House caucus and let them have a vote, and we'll see. I mean, it either will or it won't, but the Republican leadership has refused to do that. This partisanship we have right now, I believe, is very destructive, and it, especially when it's dealing with continuing resolutions for the operation of the government and the obligation of the country to pay its debts. And Ed may have some reason for it that I don't have, but yeah. I think it's bad.
What's your take on this part?
I think I'd like to reach for a higher plane on this. I respect your viewpoint there, Jim Guy, but it's not useful to characterize the Republican Party as extremist, you know, or to say that it's the Tea Party. I mean, these are volatile words in today's media market. We don't get anywhere doing that. And when you do that, and then the next thing you do is say, can't we work together, after denigrating a whole category of people? So I don't think that's a good way to approach it. I would rather look at this and try to understand what is it that is taking place. And what I see is this. There's definitely a distinction in philosophy between the Democrats and the Republicans, no doubt about it. Conservative on the one hand, Republicans, and liberal on the other hand, Democrats. And then I think it's plain to see that geography is a factor. You mentioned redistricting. But if you look at a map of the United States after the last election to show you where the votes came from in the House of Representatives races, what you will see is in the big cities are blue. Just scattered around the country. The big cities are blue. That's where the Democrat representatives are coming from. The rest of the country is red, and that's where the Republican representatives are coming from flyover country. Arkansas happens to be in that area. So you've got geography, you've got philosophy, and now you have, and why is it different today? Because that divide is wider than it was, and now you have this pressure of the debt ceiling. Debt of $16 trillion, mm-hmm. New entitlement programs, Affordable Care Act being the latest and biggest of the entitlement programs. These things have to be dealt with, and that creates pressure. And so I think that is a better way to explain it than to point fingers at one side or the other and then say, let's work together.
Well, of course, that's what you just did. You said you've got conservatives and liberals.
Well,
I'm saying there are moderates. And on each side, there are extremists within each party, mine and yours.
You didn't say that to begin with.
No, the Tea Party and the minority of the majority. The minority of the Republican Party, and it has been times when it was a minority of the Democratic Party. And it's terribly unfortunate. We should be reaching the moderate level. But whatever the situation is, we cannot say we will not pay debt that we have already incurred, and that's what the debt limit's about. Yeah. So that's not a moderate, I'm a liberal or conservative, that's the Constitution.
All right, the easy answer for you guys on this last question right here, open seat in the second congressional district comes up in the next year or two. Who wins in a rematch between Jim Guy Tucker and Ed Bethune?
That's easy. Jim Guy will answer that one for you.
I am out of politics.
Such a political answer. Such a political answer.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, speaking with two Arkansans who served in the U.S. House of Representatives, Democrat Jim Guy Tucker and Republican Ed Bethune. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York, online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is folk singer Michael Jonathan. The Woodsongs Old Time Radio Hour is coming to Eureka Springs for a huge double show worldwide broadcast. It's Saturday, October 26th at the Odd, featuring the legendary Michael Martin Murphy and Leroy Troy in the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band, plus amazing artists from across the Ozarks. For tickets, 253-7333 or visit OzarkFolkFestival.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Holiday Island is an upscale retirement community on Table Rock Lake, 8 miles north of Eureka Springs. The suburban district operates its own centralized water and sewer system. But last year, state inspectors discovered that nearly three-quarters of the potable water supply had gone missing. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich goes up there to take a look.
Chad McGee and Frank Lowe stand ankle-deep in muddy water inside a dirt trench on Holiday Island, fixing a water leak. Their boss, Dan Trader, monitors progress. He's superintendent of water and wastewater at Holiday Island.
We had Matchpoint Incorporated come out and do a leak survey for us on the island where we're at right now. And this is the one of the leaks they discovered while they were here.
Matchpoint, based in North Carolina, is expert at locating waterline leaks, and they've searched along 20 miles of Holiday Island so far, with 50 more to go, detecting 16 leaks, most of them on service connections. Holiday Island was publicly incorporated in the summer of 1970 and features a large country club, several swimming pools, an 18-hole golf course, shopping district, and busy marina. 5,000 home sites were platted on the landscape, which is heavily forested and really steep. Half of the lots remain unsold. Of 1,600 existing homes, most were built in the 70s and 80s. And that's one of the problems, says Waterworks Superintendent Dan Schrader.
It's almost about 90% service connections. It's a material they backfilled with when they first installed these.
Apparently, work crews backfilled with debris, and as the ground settled and shifted, water lines broke. Standing at the ready to backfill around this replaced service connection line is a large load of finely crushed limestone.
And then the leftover field material that we excavated out, we'll put that back in the hole.
Trader calculates that as much as 300 million gallons leaked from broken service connections, cracked water mains, and street lines last year. So where did all that water go?
Sometimes it does surface. However, about 3 weeks ago, we were on a similar leak, and there was no water to be found on the surface. And we actually excavated a hole similar to this one here, and the water was just seeping down through the rock layers. And, you know, by the time we turned the water off, that the water that was in the ditch just drained completely out. So it's just going through the rock shelving and, you know, down into the lake.
Table Rock Lake, which is actually the tailwaters of Beaver Dam, curves around the west side of Holiday Island. Three deep wells tapped into the Rubidoux Aquifer supply the district's water. A fourth well has been offline due to high levels of radium. And with various pressure stations along the line, residents did not notice much of a shift in their water pressure, Schrader says.
They will see some in the volume, but we are able to keep up with our water system that we have, the groundwater wells. But it is taxing on them. I mean, they're running a lot longer than what they should.
Holiday Island operates three fire stations with a volunteer crew of 25 firefighters. Burn bans are strictly enforced, a good thing given the current water situation. And in recent years, young couples with children have moved into the resort development, raising enough kids to fill three public school buses every day. More than 200 new and resale homes are currently on the market. Prices have dropped nearly 20% over the last year, according to real estate statistics. The Arkansas Department of Health conducts triennial sanitary survey inspections across Arkansas and documented late last year that 72% of Holiday Island's treated water was unaccounted for. Jeff Stone is director of the drinking water program.
It is unusual. Most water systems probably come in on water loss, I would guess, somewhere between 10 and 20%. So it is unusual.
Dan Trader says his department has done a good job maintaining pressure along the line to prevent contaminants from being sucked in, leading to boil orders. And Jeff Stone says while no enforcement order has been issued against Holiday Island, ADH will continue to monitor the situation.
Normally, water utilities recognize that if they have water available, they don't want to lose it through leaks. Just like Holiday Island is taking steps to try to find their leaks and fix them now, that's what needs to occur.
6 years ago, the district upgraded its wastewater treatment plant, and Dan Trader says the network of sewer lines appears to be in good working order. Over the spring and summer, 85% of the leaks along a 20-mile section of line have been repaired already. Match Point will return later this month to survey the remaining 50 miles. According to state sources, no loans were issued for waterline repairs by either Arkansas Natural Resources Commission or USDA Rural Development. The district assesses annual property owner fees for the privilege of living on Holiday Island, valued at $1.5 million last year. In a phone call from District Manager Dennis Kelly, he said Holiday Island is operating in the black and has no plans to raise assessments to pay for waterline repairs. So the total cost to fix this water leak problem, just $21,000. That's because the labor is being provided in-house by very handy district crews.
And it's going to hold, right?
Yes.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Wednesday, October 9th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Who's with us, Antoinette?
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, thank goodness you knew the answer.
Yeah.
For a second, I was worried. I thought something had happened.
No, no.
Kyle's like, who's here? I don't know. All right. Every week, we try to tell you a few things going on in the region.
Right.
So this is that day.
Okay.
Tulsa on Friday, Alabama at the Hard Rock Casino.
The band, not the football team.
Right.
Okay.
Or the state. October 13th. I have to tell my friend Susanna about this. Chris Christopherson at the Mabee Center.
When is that?
October 13th.
You know, Chris Christopherson, if I may, Rhodes Scholar, Golden Glove boxer, member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, member of the Songwriting Hall of Fame.
Made one of the great movies of all time.
Which would be?
A Star is Born.
Actor, Renaissance guy. Ah, Chris Christopherson. Okay. When is this?
This is October 13th
uh-huh.
at the Mabee Center. And you can call 918-495-6400 for tickets. And October 18th, ZZ Top, if you missed them, will be at the Hard Rock Casino.
Or if you saw them and just thought, boy, I've
got to go again.
I've got to see these guys again.
In Little Rock, October 14th, Luke Bryan at the Verizon Arena. And I noticed that Cher is coming.
Yes.
What?
Check out the Verizon Center in Little Rock. And in Kansas City, on the 16th, Josh Groban at the Sprint Center. And on the 18th, Bonnie Raitt at the Midland by AMC.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We With the 36-mile Razorback Greenway to be completed within the year, officials are looking for ways to complement the trail and connect smaller communities to the paved bicycle and pedestrian route that runs from Bella Vista to Fayetteville. The Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission wants the public's input as they, along with other advocates in the community, begin to develop a Northwest Arkansas Regional Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with a couple of the plan's key members, and she has this report.
For those of us that live in some of the larger communities of Northwest Arkansas, such as Fayetteville, Bentonville, or Siloam Springs, the success of a public trail system is easily seen. Take an afternoon walk along Skull Creek Trail in Fayetteville, and you'll be met by bikers, dog walkers, runners, and commuters. But for those who live in some of the smaller outlying communities, like Farmington, Gentry, or Elm Springs, there are no trails, and there is no connection to this Razorback Greenway. Steve Bosmowski is a planner with Alta Planning and Design, a national greenway company that has been in the area since 2008. He says this regional master plan is the next step, and over the next several months, we'll be collecting input from 25 communities with 1,000 people or more.
Meet with local leaders, attend local events, and that way collect information. Kind of that local insight is sort of the key kind of thing that when we go out there, we want to find those key issues as far as infrastructural components, programming. Some communities, may not have had any sort of process or thought towards trails and things like that, and we'll offer resources of where design guidelines, things like that, and what other communities are doing as well. But also, there will be ideas and people in each community that will be able to provide some kind of insight, and we'll get things started in communities depending on, the level of interest or the level of involvement they've had in bicycle and pedestrian consideration so far.
Basically, they want to know where the key connections are, which locations bicyclists and pedestrians want access to, whether a downtown area, a public park, or schools, but also what kinds of things people are involved in right now.
There's, a number of bicycle clubs and organizations involved in this type of stuff in the area, and we want to bring those resources together and pick their brains about what they're doing and then also augment them, enhance them. Okay, so now what can we do now that we're thinking about these extensions from the Razorback Greenway, and you guys are always doing these after-school programs, these guys are doing this over there. How can we move forward from there?
Yeah, we would like to see people be able to integrate the trail experience into their everyday life. So whatever it takes to make that easier for them is the kind of information that we'd like to hear.
That's Misty Murphy, Regional Trails Coordinator with the Northwest Arkansas Council. A big component of the planning is focused on the younger generation, how to get students to and from school without relying on automotive use, releasing some of the congestion school traffic causes. Misty says connections to schools have proved successful in the larger communities.
I know of a school in Rogers that recently was able to get rid of two bus routes because so many children at that elementary school were walking or riding their bikes to school, and that's all because of the trails that they've recently put in. So it can very quickly change the culture of a society if you just get involved and use it.
The council is focused on looking at the region as a whole and how it can help it prosper. An avid biker herself, Misty's position there is brand new. She just started at the end of September and will focus primarily on outreach.
We have a lot of different cities that are working together, and it seems like, we've had Fayetteville finished and Bentonville finished, but then we just kind of had this zone in the middle where there wasn't a whole lot that you could do yet. It's really coming together in a regional context. So I see my job as really promoting the Greenway on a regional level and getting people to use the trail, getting the awareness out there, and helping the cities collaborate together on really what is a pretty large project.
The hope is that a resident can work, say, in Bentonville, yet live in Lowell, and have the ability to bike to work safely. That commute just isn't possible right now. She says that amenities like this will help the local economy, whether providing a passageway to business or as an attractant to the area for employers and employees. There is also a cultural link to developing this master plan. From Pea Ridge to Prairie Grove to the Butterfield Trail, Northwest Arkansas is home to many historical landmarks. Steve says a heritage trail plan is already in the works, yet it focuses on on-road historical connections.
The old Trail of Tears, they've mapped out exactly what that corridor that followed through this area, and the idea is to design sort of a bicycle and pedestrian facility along those corridors, and Trail of Tears, Civil War travel trails, and the Butterfield Coach Trail, the old trade routes that are once upon a time served a different purpose than they serve today, but are very important components of this history here, and they can also form an interesting component to bicycle and pedestrian developments here as well.
He says that's exactly what he wants to know about, places that are important and meaningful to people in the community, where residents place value and want to go. Recreation also plays an important role in this multi-use plan.
I think this area has done really well. You know, people have areas to go and get exercise and get outside, but also incorporating transportation components, the actual commute to work and those utilitarian commutes too are be a big part of it as well. So it's definitely a dynamic effort as far as cultural attractions, recreational avenues, and then the utilitarian purposes as well. So kind of tying all those things together going to be part of the plan.
Steve recently spent an afternoon in Farmington, west of Fayetteville, with local officials and received a tour of the town.
So, for example, some of the things that we talked about, you know, the 62 corridor right through town is a pretty tough section to cross if you wanted to walk or ride a bike. And, you know, they have a culvert that goes under the road where kids walk under because it's way safer than the road and probably more fun too. It's kind of, you know, sneak down there, and it's a, you know, beautiful riparian quarter once you get away from the road. And so things like that, there's, you know, little kind of nooks and crannies in each community that we want to identify and take advantage of those opportunities to build trails and connect different parts of the community.
It can be difficult for smaller, more rural areas to see the benefits, and that's why this plan is being developed.
You know, we hope to be a good resource for them and be able to help catalyze future planning efforts that can, just to know that they also have a team that's approaching this stuff aggressively in the area to help draw from.
And once I've seen from at least from the example in Bentonville is once you have these amenities available, people do use them. I mean, if you look at how downtown Bentonville has changed over the last couple of years, you can't go down on the Bentonville Square anytime and not see a bunch of cyclists out there getting ready to, you know, just ride down the Crystal Bridges Trail or get on some mountain bike trails out there. So it very quickly can change the culture of a community.
The group began outreach and taking input at Fayetteville's First Thursday last week. And thanks to a grant from the Walton Family Foundation, will continue their efforts at farmers markets, fairs, and events in towns across the region for the next couple of months, with the goal of developing a plan next year. To provide input online or see a list of session dates for the Northwest Arkansas Regional Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, visit nwabikepedplan.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
In about 3 minutes, Larry and Rachel, the duo better known as Brick Fields, will be inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio to perform a brand new song.
So earlier in the show, we talked about school districts offering flu vaccines throughout the state. Now we're going to have some specifics for Fayetteville. Flu shots will be available for all students and staff in the Fayetteville Public Schools from October 16th through the 23rd. The schedule is as follows. Next Wednesday, McNair Middle School and Vandergriff Elementary School will be the sites of flu shots. And then October 17th, so Thursday, Leverett Elementary, Washington Elementary, and Butterfield Trail Elementary. On Friday, October 18th, Fayetteville High School, Ramey Junior High. And let's see, on Monday, October 21st, Owl Creek School and Asbell Elementary. On Tuesday, October 22nd, Holt Middle School and Holcomb Elementary. And on Wednesday, October 23rd, you can go to Happy Hollow Elementary, Root Elementary, and Woodland Junior High. Now, they have specific times for this, so feel free to contact your individual school so that you can be aware of the specific times that those are going on. Each student must return a completed signed permission form before an immunization will be administered, but they are free. There's no cost.
Very good. And always wash your hands.
Yes, always wash your hands. That is always free and helpful.
Not as, perhaps as good as a flu shot, but close. The Appleseed School Garden Market is going to take place 4 until 6 Friday at Collier Drugstore on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. It's an opportunity for School Garden Club students to sell the produce grown in their own school garden. along with contributions from local farmers. More information can be found at appleseedsnwa.org. On tomorrow's show, conversation with Natalie Freeman, who has spearheaded this project.
Looking forward to that. Should be fun. Sounds like a good time for the kids.
And that market will be then right before the homecoming parade.
Is it homecoming?
Yes.
I always forget that there's a parade.
Yeah. Well, there hasn't always been, but there has been the last several years, and there will be again this year.
Oh, for the university. I'm sorry. I was blinking for a minute. I was thinking, I knew it was university homecoming. I was thinking Fayetteville.
I don't know when that
is. That's where I got confused. Okay. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
So look forward to that tomorrow.
Yes.
Perfect. The Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Fayetteville is a home for liberal religion where all are welcome and all beliefs are respected. Located at 901 West Cleveland in Fayetteville, Sunday service is at 11 a.m. with spiritual education at 10 a.m. Think Tank is held the first and third Wednesdays of each month. More information is available at FayettevilleUnitarian.org.
It has been a busy few months for Larry Brick and Rachel Fields, the blues-tinged duo known as Brick Fields. They've added members to their live band called The Chosen Ones. They've won the Ozark Blues Society Challenge and will represent the region at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis in January. And they've just released their latest CD. It's called Go Ahead and Sang the Blues. This week, Larry and Rachel came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk about all of those accomplishments, including that title song on the new CD.
This is a good story, and I'm going to let Rachel tell it.
Oh, is it a good one? Well, I'm from Arkansas, so is Larry, so you get that hick accent. So, I know what story you're talking about, but sang is what it comes from, you know. It's just Southern, that's why. But the reason, the title song, the reason I wrote that song is because a few years back when we put out Gospel Blue, Bruce Aglauer from Alligator Records was looking at us and came out and heard us, and we were in contact, and he decided that the music was religious music, and he just didn't know how to promote it. So that was his final saying on that. So I wrote that song inspired by Bruce Aglauer. So if you ever listen to the words to it, you'll hear that.
One of the truly underrated performers of all time is an Arkansan, Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, she was amazing. Yeah. And apparently we agree because you have a Sister Rosetta Tharpe song on here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love her. She's inspired me tremendously. And I just don't know what else to say. I just love her. She's amazing. She's one of a kind. She's inspired.
And her guitar playing was so ahead of its time.
Light years.
Electric guitar back in the, I don't know, the 40s or 50s or whenever. But, she was the forefront for Chuck Berry and all those guys, you know. It's like, wow, a woman doing this, you know, cool.
An African-American woman from Arkansas in the 1940s. More or less, if not inventing rock and roll guitar, certainly pioneering it.
Yeah.
I'd say she invented it.
Now, if people are paying attention, it's also Brick Fields and The Chosen Ones. There are four folks in The Chosen Ones, right?
That's right.
How did this happen?
I get to tell this one.
Okay,
so we moved to Fayetteville, and this new band started coming together. Well, Ben, our harmonica player, is from Israel, from Jewish descent. So is Larry. And I said, Larry, this band ought to be blessed because we got God's people in it. And Larry said, yeah, it'll be like Brick Fields and The Chosen Ones. And I said, well, that sounds pretty good. Let's just stick with that.
So you've got, you mentioned Johnny on drums.
We've got Jennifer Parker playing bass. She plays with some other bands here in town, including Candy Lee and the Sweets. And we've got Ben Sass from Israel on the harmonica. We've got Matt Jenkins on keyboards, who also plays around a lot of folks in town. And on the CD there, we've got some other players, but as a band, that's our group.
And if people pay attention to music locally, they're familiar with those names. And you mentioned the guests you have on the new CD, and I'll ask you about the new CD in a moment. But you got RJ Michaud.
That's right. Yeah.
And Earl Kay.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And John Davies
as well. And John Davies, that's right. So when you went to ask some people to help out, You didn't aim low, did you?
No.
No, they enjoy doing it. Each and every one of them was thrilled to say, yeah, you know, let me at it.
Well, to celebrate the challenge win, to celebrate the Chosen Ones being added to Brickfields, mm-hmm. to celebrate the brand new CD, could we hear some music?
Sure.
Well, of course.
Okay.
That's why we're here.
Well, I always like to ask.
I'd like to play a song called Junk. How about that?
Okay. And this is on the new CD.
Yes.
So very few folks notice the good God does every day, but the man with the great big voice, he gains the press from all his hate. Oh, but Lord, oh, what a time they have on the dish in the evening time, yeah, talking about a fool. Of the junk going round, so much of it, yeah. I heard a man up on my modem. He was telling children love is dead. He was poking fun at my Savior. He said he lived and died a fairy tale. Well, I'm here to tell you love ain't dead. The tears and bloodshed, they are true, my friend. He just a hurt little boy who need a new toy. A victim of the now and the junk going round. It's best you open up your eyes. If you're listening to the light, you ain't ever gonna hear the cry. Oh, a love of a sharing of truth coming from the blue, and the love that knows your name. We've been waiting a long time just to take. It's best you open up your eyes. If you're listening to the light, you ain't ever gonna hear the cry. Oh, a love of a sure enough truth coming from the blue, and the love that knows your name. We've been waiting a long time just to take that ride. Way on out of town from the junk going round. Yes, sure enough is here. Miles and miles of endless junk, y'all. Piles and piles of it. Lord, I'm talking about junk.
The duo Brick Fields is Rachel Fields and Larry Brick. Their just-released CD with the Chosen Ones is titled Go Ahead and Sang the Blues. A release party for the CD will be held tomorrow night at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. They'll also perform at Crosswoods in Clarksville on October 19th, and they'll be playing in Eureka Springs during the original Ozarks Folk Festival later this month. You can learn more about them and their live dates at their website, BrickFieldsMusic.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now.
America strikes back. Afghanistan is pounded with bombs and missiles from the air and sea.
We are supported by the collective will of the world.
The war in Afghanistan is now 12 years old. We'll look at the U.S. strategy to end what is now the nation's longest war. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to 91.3 FM.
Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. The Alma Performing Arts Center welcomes Country Legends, featuring recording artists Bill Anderson, Jim Ed Brown, and Helen Cornelius, Saturday, October 19th at 7:30 p.m. This family-friendly fundraiser and celebration of classic country music will benefit the Alma Boys and Girls Club. Tickets and more information available at almapac.org or 632-2129.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Mulberry.
Mulberry. Excellent. Couple notes before we go.
Sure.
Want to wish a happy anniversary, happy birthday, I'm not really sure which one, to our neighbors across the street.
Oh, the library.
Yes. It's been 9 years since the opening of the Blair Library. So it's a birthday and anniversary. I'm never quite sure which. Either way.
I guess
way.
Since it's a structure, it'd be an anniversary. I don't know. That's a good question. It's the 9th anniversary of the opening.
Yes. So congratulations to them. Love having them across the street. And yeah. Hope they love having us across the street. Hope it's a reciprocal, loving neighbor relationship. So congratulations to them and happy to have them there. Also, caught a little bit of performance today this morning. And I was surprised to hear a performance from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I was working, so I didn't hear it.
I am.
Which is not to indicate that you weren't. That sounded bad.
That's okay. I know what you mean. Yes, from Fayetteville, Arkansas, and it was a performance by the Dover Quartet, which I believe Fred Child said used to be the Old City mm-hmm. Quartet. And he also mentioned that... they're going to be an artist in residence in about 2 weeks.
Oh.
So, yeah, that was interesting. And like I said, I only caught a little bit of the show, but I did catch that part. So if you missed it and would like to hear it, you can catch it tonight at 8 o'clock following the encore edition of Ozarks at Large.
Unless this is the encore edition, then you can hear it next.
Yes. So there's that.
Right.
Just wanted to let everybody know. Give them a heads up. Have a good night.
You too.
Did you have a good night?
Oh, I did. Yes. Yes. Went to... a fundraiser and saw a lot of great people and had a good time.
Good.
Learned a little bit more about how beer is made.
How?
Had nothing to do with the fundraiser, but Fossil Cove provided the beer at the fundraiser, and I talked to Ben a little bit.
Oh, okay. And how are those folks doing?
Well,
I haven't talked to him
cool.
in a while.
Very good.
Good. Yeah. And did you learn something specific about how beer was
no.
made?
Oh, no.
Okay.
He tried to tell me something, but it was all science.
Okay. All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Kyle will be back along with his co-host, Christina Thomas.
You and I back on Friday.
Yes.
With Tusk.
With Tusk, the mascot for the University of Arkansas.
For homecoming weekend.
For homecoming weekend. So looking forward to that. Thanks again for listening and have a happy Wednesday.